Warning. You're about to enter the arena and join the battle to save America with your host, Sean Parnell.
What is up, battle crew? It is Wednesday, and I think it is a particularly savage Wednesday. We've got Savage Rich Barris in the arena today. It's going to be an awesome show. What's up, battle crew? It's a great day to be an American. And from sea to shining sea and everybody in between, welcome, Patriots. It's great to have you here. This show's going to be just incredible. I love having Rich Barris here. He's the best in the world at what he does. We're going to talk right off the top about the curse of being a combat leader. We're going to get right into Biden and his plan to bring Palestinian refugees. I'll give you one guess where they might be going. I told you about this maybe a month ago on the show. I said to bookmark this episode because I guarantee you it was going to happen. Yeah, he's planning on bringing Palestinian refugees here to America. That would be a disaster. We're going to talk about who these people really are, how our education system has absolutely failed our youth. I'm going to tell you also why this motion to vacate for Marjorie Taylor Greene is not a good idea. I understand why she wants to do it, but strategically, not smart. I think she's falling into a trap. It's a trap. Beware. And if we have time, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about another shocking cover-up by the Centers for Disease Control. Okay. Well, let's talk. So last night, I didn't sleep well. In fact, I didn't sleep well at all. In fact, most nights I have a real difficult time sleeping. And no, this isn't a PTSD thing. I have nightmares and I wake up. I think it's just part of my time in the Army, a byproduct of that time in many ways. I talked to Commander Melanie about it. And when we discuss it, because, I'll wake up and I'll be like, oh, I didn't sleep a lot that last night. And I don't obviously talk to her about it in the middle of the night because I don't want to wake her up. But those are tough times. Your mind's racing a million miles an hour. And again, so much of it is based on my time in the military, time in combat. And what I told Melanie and how I explained it to her is that, like, I have trouble sleeping because I'm always planning. I'm always thinking about what's coming next. And they really beat this into you as a young leader in the military, especially my non-commissioned officers who taught and coached and mentored me on what it meant to be a leader. I would have been nothing without them. I wouldn't even be here talking to you alive today were it not for my soldiers and my non-commissioned officers who trained me. But they were constantly plan, 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 plan for the worst, hope for the best. Always have a plan. Always make a decision. And that's how I operated in Afghanistan. And prior to big missions, I'll tell you right now, I didn't sleep at all because I was going over my plan constantly, going over my target reference points where big guns were targets for big guns and artillery. What we would do is we'd pre-plan targets prior to going out on a mission so that if we got ambushed or something, which happened basically every time we left the wire, I could just say, fire TRP one, target reference point one. And that was already planted on a map for our gun bunnies back at the base and wanted to check and double check the grid coordinates to that. Wanted to check and double check the routes that we were taking to make sure that we weren't traversing the same routes over and over and over again. Why? Because if you set a pattern, the enemy notices. And if the enemy notices your pattern, it's easier for them to attack and kill you. So much of my life today was shaped during my time as a young Army leader, certainly during my time in Afghanistan as well. But I didn't sleep well. I probably didn't sleep hardly at all. I don't know if you can see it in my face, if you see bags under my eyes or anything like that. But and now because of that, I'm a little bit under the weather, but I'm fighting through it. I will not miss a show. This show is for you and it always will be. But as I was thinking about the show today, I was thinking about a story that I really haven't talked about in a very long time. And that is, well, let me first back up and say combat kind of turns everything on its head. all the norms that you've experienced in your life up until a certain moment, like the idea that we take care of the powerless here, we love and take care of our children. Combat just throws all that to the four winds, puts you in the middle of one big moral quandary. And that to me was really difficult. It was shocking. And just follow me here. I'm going somewhere with this. I mean, for example, what if a child in Afghanistan, you're out on patrol, you're at a traffic control point, you know, you've got trucks spread out and you're just controlling the flow of traffic and you're checking cars, looking for the enemy, trying to make sure you're not being ambushed. What if out of the corner of your eye, you see a child carrying a mine and that child is walking up to you? Now, in Afghanistan, unexploded ordnance and mines are a common thing. They're all over the place. Is this child bringing to you a mine to turn in because he or she found it in its backyard? Or is this child being used by the enemy as a suicide bomber? And when that child approaches, is that bomb going to blow up? I'm telling you. And if that's the case, if that's what you think, then what do? You shoot a kid? I mean, that's my point, right? You have situations like this in combat all the time where there oftentimes they're just not a good right or wrong answer. There's a right answer to a lot of this stuff, but by God, if you make the wrong decision, you'll be paying for that up here for the rest of your life. And one of the things that I was shocked about in Afghanistan, when we first got there, of course, we were taken in by the beauty of Afghanistan. In another life, it could be a ski resort. If those people had their you-know-what together, they would make billions of dollars a year in tourism just skiing on some of the slopes in Afghanistan. It's one of the most beautiful countries you'd ever see. And so we were taken in by that beauty and taken in by the cultural differences between us and Afghanistan. The best way to explain it, folks, it is really like the Flintstones meet the Jetsons. Like the Afghans were like the Flintstones and we were like the Jetsons. I mean, there were times where we'd call in an airstrike and we have these laser pointer things where you'd lace a target with a thermal laser that can only be seen through a thermal sight or night vision. And the Afghans, our allies would patrol with us and they thought we had like magic wands. We were just pointing at hilltops and they'd blow up and that's what they thought. I mean, it's crazy. It sounds crazy to talk about, but this is the kind of environment that I was in and my soldiers were in. And again, I'm going somewhere with this. But as we traversed this journey and learned about what Afghanistan was like, we would find ourselves, we all watch those World War II movies, especially Band of Brothers, where, you know, World War II soldiers, American soldiers are giving candy to European kids. And we thought that was awesome. We wanted to be just like them. And the kids in Afghanistan were pretty awesome. They were remarkable, we thought. So we'd give them candy from our trucks. We were attempting to build a relationship between ourselves and the people who lived there. Nothing but altruistic intentions behind this. And we'd make sure that the candy would go to everybody, to include little girls. Because, here in America, little boy, little girl, it doesn't matter. Little kids are awesome. You know, little kids are the best. And what's crazy about it is how remarkably similar kids are in Afghanistan to kids here in terms of just, how they experience life. Anyway. We'd give the candy to the kids. And I remember driving off after the first time that we did it, looking in, out of the back of the turret, gun truck turret of our truck, we would see the boys beating the hell out of the girls. And in some cases, we'd go back to the village days later and find these little girls just absolutely decimated, beat up. I mean, bloodied and bruised, sometimes very, very seriously injured. And come to find out, the older boys were beating them up to take their candy because women are second-class citizens there. And that was shocking. That was shocking. So our policy from then on was don't give candy to the kids anymore because it's just going to cause issues and kids could get hurt. Just change the way that you think. And so it concerns me when I heard about Biden's plan to bring Palestinians here to America last night. Listen to this.
This news exclusively on CBS News. The Biden administration is considering a plan to allow some Palestinian refugees to come here to the United States. That's according to internal federal government documents that were obtained by CBS's Camilo Montoya Galvez. According to the plan, some Palestinians fleeing the war would be offered a permanent safe haven here in the U.S. And one option under consideration is to allow those who have immediate family members who are either American citizens or permanent residents to enter the country if they pass various background checks first. The plans would require coordination with Egypt, which has so far refused to allow large numbers of people from Gaza to cross the border into that country.
Listen, folks, no, 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 no. I want to give you some stats here. 15 countries in the Middle East are under Sharia law. Sharia law is, of course, a draconian Islamic law that allows women to be beaten in the streets or beheaded, or God forbid, just the accusation of adultery or even looking at another man could lead a woman to be stoned to death. Absolutely horrible stuff. 15 countries in the Middle East are under Sharia law. 50 plus countries in the Middle East are majority Muslim. 0% of those countries, none of those countries want to take in Palestinian refugees. You heard right in that clip that Egypt doesn't want to take them either. And the reason for that is that anywhere the Palestinians go, trouble follows. They are, I mean, everybody in the Middle East. Again, remember, Flintstones meets the Jetsons. That was like my time in Afghanistan. These people could not be more different than us. But when you look at what the Palestinians believe, there was a poll that came out, something like 90% of them support Hamas. And I can guarantee you, I guarantee you that these people, when they're brought here, this whole background check bullshit is just that. It's bullshit. You want to know why? Because there's no Social Security office in Gaza. There's no records, government records in Gaza. We don't know who these people are, and the vast majority of them support terrorism. Listen to the Biden administration being asked about this plan today.
As the administration considers bringing Palestinians here to the U.S. as refugees, do you know how many people that the U.S. hopes to relocate? And secondly, given the challenges getting in and out of Gaza, will the U.S. assist in physically bringing Palestinians here?
So let me just first start saying that we just don't have anything to announce at this time. But I do want to lay out a little bit and take a step back of what we've been able to do since the beginning of the conflict, right? We have helped more than 1,800 American citizens and their families leave Gaza, many of whom have come to the United States. So many of that 18,000 is here. And the president has said, and as in his with his direction, we have also helped and will continue to help some particularly vulnerable individuals, such as children with serious health problems and children who were receiving treatment for cancer, get out of harm's way and receive care at nearby hospitals in the region. And let's not forget the president, this administration continues to be the largest contributor of humanitarian assistance. This is something that the secretary is going to be talking about in this hour. The humanitarian assistance going into Gaza to address the condition.
What the hell is she talking about? Does anyone understand what the hell KJP was saying? I mean, just to go off, not to go off on too much of a tangent. But this woman is so singularly terrible at her job. I mean, listen, she didn't get her job based on merit. She got her job because she was a black lesbian. And the crazy thing about this, she is by far one of the dumbest people ever to serve, if not the dumbest person ever to serve as White House press secretary. She's by far the worst press secretary in American history, and she's essentially a squatter. They can't fire her precisely because they hired her because she's a black lesbian. She's a DEI hire. So she thinks she's doing a great job, and she's basically like Leonardo DiCaprio from Wolves of Wall Street saying, I ain't leaving. She's essentially a glorified squatter in the White House, and the Biden administration knows what a disaster she is, which is why you see Admiral Kirby at the podium all the time. This woman it does so much damage to the Biden administration. It's unbelievable, but she thinks she's doing a good job. She ain't going anywhere. She's comfortable to squat in the White House. The Biden administration can't fire her because she's a diversity hire. So this is why I'm relatively optimistic, as a little bit of a sidebar here. I'm optimistic about the left collapsing in on itself like a dying star, because if their hiring process isn't based on merit and it's based on superficial things like skin color and sexual orientation, clearly they're not going to get the best people. And eventually, if they don't have the best people, those organizations will collapse in on itself. But anyway, she doesn't answer the question, but I can guarantee to you, just like I said a couple months ago, that the Biden administration is going to bring those people here. Mark my words, it's going to happen. And I'll tell you exactly why it's going to happen. It's going to happen because they don't want to lose Michigan. They don't want to lose Wisconsin. They don't want to lose Pennsylvania. They are doing nothing but pandering to a demographic of people in the hopes that it allows them to cling with power. I've got Savage Rich Barris up next. He's got some numbers on the Palestinians' support of Hamas. We're going to get to him in just a second. Okay. Let's bring Savage Rich Barris on. He's been waiting patiently in the virtual green room. Savage Rich, welcome, my friend.
Thanks for having me back, brother. How's it going?
You know what? I owe you a thank you for holding down the show last week when my show crapped the bed. So thank you, good sir.
Yeah, man, anytime. I told you we'd roll with it. We made it work.
You are a gentleman and a scholar, sir. And if it happens again tonight, people stand by. Savage Rich is going to steer the ship for a little bit, and I will be back. But Rich, okay. So first of all, what do you think of all this stuff? I have some numbers here. 80% of Americans favor Israel in the Gaza war, while 20% say they favor Hamas. Now listen to this, man. And I know you have numbers of your own, but Israel versus Hamas support by age group, 65 plus, 93% support Israel versus 7% supporting Hamas. 55 to 65, 91% support Israel, 9% support Hamas. 45 to 54, 85% support Israel, 15% support Hamas. 35 to 44, 75 Israel, 25 Hamas. 25 to 34, 64% Israel, 36% Hamas. 18 to 24, 57% support Israel, 43% support Hamas, which is, so the dynamic here is as kids get younger, the more difficult it is for them to see with moral clarity. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah. I mean, well, they're in school, they're young, you know, Winston Churchill used to say, and, you know, I don't know that this totally applies in normally domestic policy, but you know, the younger you, if you're young and you're not liberal, you don't have a heart. If you're old, when you're older and you're not conservative, you don't have a brain, you know? So, that goes pretty much, you know, with, domestic policy, but also to some extent foreign policy. And you have these kids in school, and I went back, I was just bored, Sean. I went back and I wanted to go back to study international relations a little bit. And one of my my university is one of the ones dealing with this right now. And they put out a statement because they were hard on these kids. But I'll tell you, I've gone to the campus because I support them financially. And I've gone to the campus. I've seen things with my own eyes lately that I don't like. I'm talking about the University of Florida, by the way. Nation. I'm proud of how they reacted to this, but even still, I can tell you that we had a professor when I was there who was Jewish, a self-loathing Jew, and you know, very, you know, them left-wing secular self-loathing Jews, and constantly favored Hamas or sympathized with sympathized with the Palestinians. And I tell him, you know, and I don't say his name, but you know, Ito. tell them, you have no idea about this world. You're four times my age and you don't know jack shit. They will cut your head off in a second, you stupid old man. They don't give a damn about you. And then he was weird, you know, have somebody like me. This was after I was in the Army when I went back to UF for that. And, you know, I was a little bit more experienced than I was as a younger student, of course. And I'll tell you, he was a bit of a nut. Even back, you know, back then, it was not, it's a school in international relations dominated by realists. You know, when you're in that part of the school, and I'm a little bit like John Mearsheimer comes to speak, like, you know, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised, or did, you know, I don't know if he does now, but I'm a little bit surprised how, you know, it's turned into what it's even turned into, even though it's apparently one of the more hardline ones when it comes to these. Hey, look, you have a right to your First Amendment rights. That's not what's going on here. That's very different. You know, that's not the same thing. When you're obstructing people, when you're threatening people, that's not your First Amendment. You don't have a First Amendment right to do that. So they really did, you know, press the school and whatnot, and the school reacted and held firm, and that's good. But I will say, I mean, that's the way it is now. The younger you are, Sean, I will give people hope by saying, you know, the generation that voted against Richard Nixon turned out to be a very conservative generation that voted in droves for Ronald Reagan. So, you know, give it time. Give it time.
So tell me some of these numbers, Rich. We're talking to Savage Rich Barris.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of these numbers about Palestinians and their support of Hamas, because here's my, what I said a month ago is that you can bank on it when news, you might have even been on the show when I made this prediction, but when they were building this, when it became apparent that Americans were going to build a port in Gaza to deliver humanitarian aid, I thought immediately
they're coming back on those ships.
They're coming back on the ships. You mark my words.
And you've seen it?
Yeah. And this is what's happening. And here's the deal, Rich. This background check stuff, that's complete bullshit. It ain't going
to
happen.
No way to, there's no way. Sean, you were in Afghanistan, or right? You were in Afghanistan, right?
Yes.
There's no way to conduct a background check on these people. Not in Syria, not in Afghanistan, not in the Gaza Strip. It is a total sham told to people in Western countries who deal with government and infrastructure and think that's, and they're ignorant, and they think that it's that way all around the world. It is not. There is no way to conduct a background on these people, the vast majority of these people. That is the biggest scam, and it really pisses me off because the people who tell those stories know it's a scam. They know it is. They're patently lying when they bring this stuff up. They're not dumb, and it's not even a matter of being dumb. It's just that most Americans don't know how it is.
And these people, Rich, these people hate us. I'm sorry. I'm not. I guarantee you I'm going to get hate mail from some shit lib leftist tonight. Oh, you said these people. Yes, the Palestinians hate us. They celebrated it in the streets after 9/11. They don't like us. They hate America, and we shouldn't be bringing them here.
And it's even worse since 9/11. And this is what I wanted to give people. So Mahmoud Abbas won his election, his presidential election in 2005, with about 60% of the vote, a little bit more. His rival, his main rival, got only about 20%. But none of them were really well-funded. Fatah, you know, none of them were really well-funded or serious. A year later, Hamas beats Fatah in the parliamentary election and gets about 42% ballpark around of the vote. Then, and this is the funny thing, Chuck Schumer calling for elections, the balls on this guy. Why don't you call for elections in Palestine, Chuck? You know you don't want to because you know how it's going to turn out. Before they cancel, they haven't an election almost 20 years, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you want to talk about importing democracy and saving democracy, they don't believe in democracy. They haven't had, and they're fine with it. Sean, not only have they not had a parliamentary election in almost two decades, they're perfectly fine with it, all right? There's nobody in the streets screaming for elections the way they're in the streets screaming for the dead bodies of Israeli babies and women. I mean, that's just the truth of it. And here's the kicker. Before they stopped that election, Hamas was polling over 70%. They were on track to win 75% of the seats in that parliamentary election. Fatah would have been wiped off the map. So, I mean, this is the funniest thing about it. At least Israel has an election and Likud wins. It's for all to see. Or, you know, maybe, you know, Likud doesn't win. They just won recently. But you know what I mean? They've had victories in most of the elections. And at least Israel is willing to stand up and say, look, yeah, we are, you know, we are voting back in Likud. They have the tougher stance. You can kiss our butt, world, you know, but at least we did this the right way. At least we did this the self-governing way, not the Palestinians. And they don't want to have that election, because if they did, the world's going to see them elect Hamas overwhelmingly. You think the last election was bad and pro-Hamas? This would be nothing. So it's gotten even worse since the days of 9/11, when we imported them like a bunch of idiots, put them in Paterson, New Jersey, and then watched them jump on the rooftops and celebrate as the buildings came down. By the way, Trump brought that up during the 2016 election, and the media tried to say he was lying until the CBS video resurfaced. Anyone who lived in the tri-state area remembered those local reports. Everybody who lived in the tri-state area. So there is no, I mean, Sean, there. Listen, I'm not one of these people who could beat around the bush. This is not compatible. These, you know, Obama used to run around saying, yeah, there are people out there who are extreme, but you know what? 99% share our values. George Bush used to say the same line. That is a load of crap.
Listen, Rich,
that isn't true at all.
It's so true. And listen, I had this video queued up. It's like three and a half minutes. I'm not going to play it, but it's of David Horowitz in 2010. He's talking to a woman. She's wearing a kippah scarf. She's obviously Muslim. He basically says, listen, I just ask you a first question, because she comes at him with all sorts of, like, you know, college far left talking points about Israel. And he just said, let me just ask you a question. Can you condemn Hezbollah and can you condemn Hamas today?
Yeah.
No, you can't. She doesn't. And then he says, it's interesting because I asked that question because the leader of Hezbollah came out the other day and said that he wishes that there were no Jews around the world and that they were all in Israel so that we could, you know, didn't have to hunt them down and we can kill them all.
Kill them
there.
All at once. Yep.
And he says to her, do you support that? Yes or no? And she says on camera and in front of the audience, this is a college student in America. Yes, I support that. This stuff, Rich, it's incompatible with Western and American life. We are importing our doom, and we're seeing it play out on the television sets.
Oh, is Israel, by the way.
What pisses me off so much is that Biden comes out today. So there's all these riots, right? And you're right. Freedom of speech is, I don't care. Hey, you want to say from the river to the sea? Fine. Okay, you're a jackass. You're a moron. You want to say that? That's fine. That's your right. But, you know, you don't get to say to Jewish kids on campus who are paying tuition, hey, no, this isn't the Jewish entrance. We're going to barricade you. You got to go in over there because we don't want your kind around here. Like, this kind of shit is really scary, Rich. It's really scary that this is happening in America. And so while all this is going on, violence on campus, I mean, like, just watch this. Just watch this and I'll continue my rant. But watch.
The quad. Look at this. Somebody is being beaten.
UCLA.
Somebody is being beaten with a stick and punches in the middle of the lawn.
Hey, don't do that.
Somebody is being badly beaten at the bottom of that brawl, right?
So first of all, where the hell are the police, right? Well, the college professors and the president of the university said he wanted the LAPD to stay off of campus. So these kids are literally beating the hell out of each other. And by the way, a young Jewish girl was beaten unconscious the other day. I mean, it's like, this shit is so out of control. Biden has been completely MIA on the issue. I mean, who the hell knows what he's doing? He's probably crapping his pants in front of some world leader. But what drives me crazy is he comes out today and said he's announcing student loan debt forgiveness. And oh, by the way, we're bringing Palestinians here. People ask me all the time, Rich, well, how do you know, like, how are you making these predictions? It's like, well, I just go to whatever hurts America the most. I think about what that is. And I
see old Rush Limbaugh here.
And no bullshit, man.
Yeah.
100% of the time, it's what these ass clowns do. And forgive my language, but it feels like, and for everybody that's watching, I'm sorry, but it feels like I'm watching America collapse before my eyes, man.
It feels like, I mean, we are. We're over $30 trillion in debt. We have no chance to pay it off. Before they unleashed a deadly pathogen on the entire world just to get rid of Donald Trump, we would at least have had some chance to grow our way out of this debt with, like, you know, decent cuts, discipline over time, and powerful economic growth. Maybe we would have been able to get it under control. You know, I had a lot of people tell me recently, Sean, that, like, damn, Rich, you're being so doom and gloomy. Well, I'm just being realistic. I mean, no country survives like this. And
that's right. Where,
I mean, you have the economic issues. You have the overexpansion issues, which started with Iraq. Well, it started before, but Iraq was like, it was the line of overexpansion. That's why we went from having the peace dividend and prosperity to being poor. I mean, we're a poor nation now. We're a debtor nation. I don't care what people say. Go into any of our urban cities. They don't look like urban cities around the rest of the world. I mean, this is a dump. This place is turning into a dump. And it's sad because we had a real opportunity. And you can talk about doing everything that's bad for the country. Sean, I mean, we're going to, you know, nothing's a coincidence. We're going to find out one day what happened with that virus. And we're not going to like the answer. I mean, that was just all so coincidental.
I mean, Rich, did you see the headline today from the Epic Times that the CDC knew that AstraZeneca and Moderna vaccines caused fatalities before they rolled them out?
Sean, I remember before Trump even left, his State Department was trying to explain to the media, the Washington Post, Fox News, the New York Times, this virus did not come from a wet market in Wuhan. They were all lying. The administration knew where it came from, whether it was a leak or not, was kind of irrelevant at that point. But they knew about this well before Donald Trump ever gave the reins to Joe Biden. They just lied about it. They intentionally lied. And then over a 2-year period, it drips out about, you know, after Biden's already in office, about the fact that this was not a wet market, you know, gone, you know, a virus in a wet market from a bat gone rogue. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. But why would you lie like that? Why would the New York Times refuse to report the truth? Like the State Department, John Ratcliffe, the director of national intelligence, he knew, these aren't like classified things. They were trying to alert the media so the media would tell the American people the real story. And they chose not to tell that. And by the way, worse, they chose to like shame and silence people who tried to actually dig in and tell the truth about it. It's not that I'm being doom and gloomy, you know, just to get back, you know, tighten up this last point. It is what it is. And I don't know how. I mean, we've been in like can kicking mode for 20 years. I don't know how long, you know, much longer we can take, you know, without having a serious conversation. Because if we don't have this conversation, and it is a doom and gloomy conversation, but if we all don't get on this page, we're never going to be able to at least mitigate the damage that's going to be done to Sean when that debt bomb alone goes off. You know, I mean, I'm not like Ron Paul over here, you know, going on and on about inflation and, you know, the debt bomb that's going to hit us 40 years later. It still hasn't hit us. Like, this is way worse than when people started warning about this. This is going to hurt a lot of people, and normal Americans are not going to be able to deal with this. The government can't even service the debt on national defense at this point. Are you kidding? So without borrowing more to do so, I mean, Sean, this is... Forget about Rome. Rome is nothing compared to this. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Paying the Visigoths to watch their back. You know, this is, we make them look like geniuses. You know, we do.
We're talking to Savage Rich Barris here, everybody. And we were discussing what was going on with Israel and Palestine. And so much of what's happening, Rich, just feels like obviously now it's come out that Soros is behind many of these things. Like the protesters that took over Hamilton Hall at Columbia.
Surprise!
Many of them were outside agitators paid by George Soros. Any sane country that would not allow George Soros to do what he's doing here. But again, we talk about importing Palestinians and importing our demise. George Soros is funding our demise. This is the least surprising thing in the world, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same story, the same song and dance over. And by the way, the Israelis are importing their own demise too, Sean, and they're even letting them vote. I mean, I hate to say it, but they have done everything in their power to try to bring Arab populations into their society and give them a say in that society. It's suicidal. And they're doing it just so that they look progressive and they're accepted on the world stage. But you know, ever since last October, something changed in the mindset of the Jewish people. And can you blame them? We'll see how long it lasts, because look what happened with us at 9/11. I mean, you know, George Bush, he took what everyone thought to be the correct posture, but he was such a naive idiot to some degree. He really was. You know, again, I have to go back to this pretending that we're all, you know, on the same page and we all have the same values, when that's very just simply not true. The Japanese don't let in any Muslim immigration. They don't let any of them in. Their argument is fertility rates are too low in our country. Theirs are too high. We like our culture. We like our history. We like our nation. I mean, that's a nation. That's what they're preserving, the Japanese people as a nation. Nobody ever calls the Japanese bigoted or xenophobic or anything like that. Their own region doesn't want them. The same thing happened with Syrian refugees. Their region didn't want them. I've seen this over and over and over again. And that kind of foolish behavior led to, and it's unbelievable to talk about it now, but no, there were some seriously bad people that the George Bush administration thought were like moderates and brought in on the conversation, to have on the conversation, including one of the teachers that later, I mean, Anwar Awlaki would be radicalized by. So, you know, this is nuts. And by the way, Anwar Awlaki was like part of the State Department delegation of moderate Muslim outreach. You know, what was the point? I mean, it's really truly something. I mean, Sean, when you just say it out loud, you know, you're like, this is unbelievable. Now, I'm being a little bit conservative with what I'm saying here with Anwar Awlaki, because I have heard a story and it's not one I want to bring up, you know, but I will tell you this. Anwar Awlaki was not radical at first. And basically, we radicalized. I mean, that's it. I mean, we did what we always do. Use people and use them for what they're worth and then shit them out. And when they come back pissed off, mad at the world, mad at the government, mad at the country, we blame them and we slap a label on them, make them public enemy number one. And in the case of Anwar Awlaki, murder him along with a 14-year-old sitting next to him.
Well, truck. Listen, Rich, I mean, I just said this a couple days ago on the show.
Shit, Sean.
Like, you're right. You're 100% right.
How many interpreters you leave in Afghanistan?
A lot.
Promised new life here. By the way, they did share our values.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I was just going to say, you know, how do you think the Afghans feel about us right now? And not only that, what about a couple of years from now when Ukraine is decimated? How do you think Ukrainians are going to feel about America?
Us, right?
They're going to, you know, I mean, this foreign policy is devastating. And this is what upsets me about Speaker Johnson transitioning to that real quick. We're talking with Savage Rich Barris. But, you know, listen, Speaker Johnson has let me down. If there were a, you know, so say it's after November, Republicans still by the, I don't know, the skin of their teeth, hopefully still have a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. There's a new speaker vote and the new Congress. I would not vote for Speaker Johnson. Okay. I would not. But Marjorie Taylor Greene is all over this motion to vacate, Rich. And I have to tell you, man, I think she has fallen into a Democrat trap. It's not really being talked about enough, but I think Hakeem Jeffries baited her into this.
Yep.
Marjorie Taylor Greene was rightfully pissed off about this aid package to Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel. And nested within that, by the way, is $3.5 billion for a state migration program to bring migrants from maybe Palestine. Maybe this was all coordinated from the very beginning,
right?
Palestine here to America. So she's rightfully mad about that. And I completely get it. I share her anger. So Hakeem Jeffries comes out knowing that she's angry, right? And releases this statement to the media saying, we are going to save Speaker Johnson should these dysfunctional Republicans
try to file a motion to vacate.
So of course she goes apoplectic, right? And so what she do? She's, I'm filing a motion to vacate. Look, the Democrats are trying to save. Oh my gosh, if the Democrats are working with him, he's a speaker for the Democrats. We've got to get rid of him. Well, there was just a special election in New York. And I think if my math is correct, Republicans can only afford to lose one vote right now until we win the special election for Buck's seat and McCarthy's seat, where we can pad our margin a little bit more. But we only can afford to lose one vote. And you think about it like this. You file a motion to vacate. Guarantee you Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats have a plan. Guarantee you that there are 3 to 5 Republicans who are threatening to retire behind the scenes who are now pissed off.
Oh, there are.
Taylor Greene. And those people could very likely cross the aisle or not vote that day and just retire a couple months later.
Show up. Right.
Not show up. And all of a sudden, you got an Hakeem Jeffries speakership in an election year. And oh, by the way, what does that mean? What comes with it is just Hakeem Jeffries gutting every single committee chair, gutting every single leadership position on the GOP side. And if we don't reach 270 electoral votes, I mean, Hakeem Jeffries is going to be controlling the House of Representatives when the election could very well be in their hands, right? I mean, this is a crazy political trap that she's fallen into here. At least that's how I think. What's your take?
And also, too, I think we have to acknowledge part of this is she owes Kevin McCarthy. And Kevin McCarthy has been doing a lot of things on that. She does. Everyone should know this. And I'm not trying to cause any waves or anything.
You're right.
But Marjorie, you know it. Like everybody in D.C. knows it. You owe him. You never got to pay him back. And what is this? Some kind of BS payback at the last minute? That's like the revenge of Kevin scheme, because the last minute challenger they threw in against Gates, that's him. They've been doing this. And it's like because Trump didn't like come to his rescue and save him. It almost feels like to me that they're attempting to throw this majority. So, and Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to wind up helping, and whether she's smart enough to acknowledge it or not. But I do think, Sean, she's smart enough to understand what a political IOU is and the kind of person that will deliver it. So I'm much more cynical and less forgiving of her for doing this, because I get it. You and I both, Sean, did not think it was smart to vacate the chair, let Kevin get beat up. You know, I mean, now look at the position we're in, but it is what it is. So for her to do this in some kind of like retribution move is childish, dangerous, and frankly, a little bit crooked. It's dirty. You know, you're trying to scratch his back. And I'm not talking about a back. I mean, this is disgusting. You know, I mean, it really is. And she's not this dumb. She can't be this dumb, Sean. She can't be. You know, I mean, there's some dumbasses in the Chamber of Commerce. I mean, in the halls of Congress, and certainly a lot of them on the Republican side, but she cannot be this stupid.
She's not. Yeah, there's something.
Come on. And Mike Johnson, it's like, with all this stuff, Ukraine, the Taiwan. By the way, Taiwan got peanuts. Not even peanuts. I said this on my show earlier today. They didn't even get peanuts compared to Ukraine in that package. They got the shells that people spit out of their mouths in those bars with the dirt floor where they don't even have bowls for the peanut butter shells. And Ukraine got all the juicy, salty peanuts, and they got the shells that are on the bottom of people's shoes mixed with spit and shit. And at the end of the day, it's like, it was such a scam. It really, and Israel got like a bag with like half nuts, and like sometimes the shells crack, so you're missing one of the nuts. You know, that's what they got. That's the equivalent. But Taiwan got nothing out of this. And I feel like, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm not that old, but I often look at Mike Johnson and think, like, was all of this going on? Like, was Iraq and Afghanistan, all 9/11, when all this happened and all these scams, you know, that they pulled on us on the first time, were you like in diapers still, Mike? Like, where were you? Were you in diapers still? How old is Mike Johnson? Somebody look it up. I feel like he was not around or something. How could you fall for the same things over and over and over without wising up at all?
Yeah, it's a great point. I think, Rich, I think he's being threatened with retirements behind the scenes. And I think that
would make good sense.
And I'm trying to, I've heard it from friends on the Hill. And if he's being threatened with retirements, honestly, what do? You can't stop it. That town down there is filled with a bunch of people with egos that are through the roof. And I think, and I'm trying to give this a positive spin here. And, you know, to me, it's like, well, better to have the majority. And we've already given Ukraine, you know, $150 billion, $200 billion as it is. What's another $61 billion? As long as we keep the majority, right? I don't know. I do know that there are other Republicans between 3 and 5 threatening to retire. And so, okay, let's transition. We're talking
we have an issue here in my state. Like, no kidding. There's already many announced, and then apparently there are risk of others. And it's like, it's unheard of. If you put the number together and the percentage of the delegation from the state, Sean, it's unheard of. I mean, it's like,
yeah, it's, I mean,
it's never had, this doesn't happen.
It's Democrats behind the scenes offering Republicans seven-figure paychecks through a proxy, right? Some lobbyists, seven-figure paychecks to some military industrial complex company.
Yes, sir.
And that's 100%. And this is what Akeem Jeffries, this is what the Democrats do. This is why I respect them. When they lose, when the chips are down, they don't surrender like Republicans. They fight back, and they have a million different ways that they can do it. And this is one of those ways. We're seeing that play out right before our eyes right now, man. And so, okay, let's transition. I got 9 minutes left, 10 minutes left. Let's go inside the numbers. We saw a Marist poll came out today. Harvard Harris came out today. Everybody's freaking out about these numbers. I think Marist had Biden up. I think Marist is a joke.
Marist is a joke.
It's always been a heavily Democrat poll.
Yep.
And then I saw this stat here. I actually saw Robert Barnes, tweet about it. He said six times as many Trump voters say they are more likely to vote for Trump as less likely if
that's in
New York show trial results in a conviction. So again, if they put him in jail, people are going to be more likely to vote for him.
And that is from Quinnipiac, which along with Marist has been, listen, folks, there's like Democrat friendly, there's Republican friendly, and then there's garbage. You're so friendly to one over the other that, you know, and it's so consistent and happens every year. Sean, let me give you just a handful from Marist, folks. So if you think of Biden, and by the way, they just polled 2 weeks ago. Marist doesn't poll every 2 weeks. Marist barely polls once every month for PBS or the college. So the fact that they re-polled again after having a Biden plus four, they were abused. Because the New York Times came out, Fox News came out, NBC came. It was totally an outlier. It was the only blue on Real Clear Politics. Everything else was red. Harris is Harvard's Trump plus four, you know, on and on and on. And Bloomberg, I mean, you saw that. Now the Morning Consult poll shifted back to Trump. Even the Economist YouGov poll is Trump plus one. That's up there with some of the worst polls. Marist College is so bad, especially in the battleground states. Let me give you the 2020 North Carolina polling for Marist College. Are you ready?
Yes.
The governor's election was Roy Cooper against Dan Forrester, the Republican who was challenging Roy Cooper. Cooper plus 16. Okay. He won barely by 4 points. And imagine being Forrester and you're going against this guy trying to fundraise. You've been a candidate, you know what it is. And then Marist College has you down 16 points. It's a little bit hard to fundraise when these polls are so bad.
Yeah.
Joe Biden plus six. Of course, Joe Biden lost that election. They even had Ted Budd losing. They were the only poll that, SurveyUSA had Ted Budd losing too. But there hasn't been an accurate poll in the Tar Heel state for over a decade. In 22, when some polled the race, largely most of us did, polled the race well for Senate in 22. That was the first time most of us got North Carolina right. In 16, I was the only accurate poll. In 20, I was the closest, not the only, but closest. It's been very difficult for pollsters to poll. Marist is routinely one of the worst polls going. Their final national poll, I believe, was Biden plus 11. So come on, guys. I mean, it's trash. They're trash. The fact that they have Biden up by, you know, two, even four, Sean, because four is within their sampling error, and Biden needs more than 4 points. He needs four or more, at least four, to secure the Electoral College. If he doesn't get it, a Biden plus two is a loss. It's a Hillary Clinton size loss in the Electoral College. That's what it is. So
do you think Trump's going to win the popular vote? I've seen polls that have him winning the popular vote.
Most of them do. And I mean, Sean, it will come down to this non-white vote shift. For people who've been following me a long time, they know that I was just somebody who just never believed any national poll. I don't care who it was. Any national poll that showed a Republican ahead. The demographics were just not there. And I told people, yeah, the Electoral College is how we select our president. And that's a, that'll be where those, you know, the my job is to determine or project what popular vote margin a Democrat needs to win the Electoral College, because that's where we are now. And I told everybody, just get your head out of your butt. Nobody's winning the popular vote for a long time. But when you're winning 40% of the Hispanic vote, you're really changing the math. When you're winning 42, 44, some polls have Trump even winning the Hispanic vote. When you're doing that, if he's even remotely close to that, if he gets George Bush or slightly better size numbers, you know, 40, 45%, he will win the popular vote. He will. I mean, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable, Sean. But that's where we're at. Coupled with if he were to get like 15% of the black vote. I mean, forget it. He's going to win it, which is just crazy. That's the math, though.
What do you think? Are you seeing anything in any of your numbers with this, you know, Pudge Alvin Bragg trial in New York? And of course, Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen was out this weekend. He's fundraising, talking as a witness. And now, I mean, these low talent ass clowns, honestly, not the smartest people in the room. Michael Cohen is one of them, man. I don't know. This is one of the areas where I think, yeah, one of the areas where Trump needs to improve a little bit is who he has around him.
Yeah.
Michael Cohen, like, I will never forget, like, him doing an interview on CNN and CNN asking him a question. So what do you make of these poll numbers? And he's just like, so we don't care. So the Trump organization doesn't care that you're, I mean, that you know, Hillary Clinton might win the state of Pennsylvania. So what? Like honest to God. And so come to find out that this guy is like a serial liar, a pathological liar, a serial
pathological.
Yeah. And now he's like on TikTok trying to fundraise, and like, he's out fundraising in public talking about the trial. So now there's a chance that this whole damn thing could get thrown out. How are the, but beyond the absurdity of all of this, we're talking to Savage Rich Barris. How are the American people seeing all of this?
I mean, Sean, this is the Democrats' best chance to get the label of felon on him. That's what all my lawyer friends tell me, given how the immunity case looks like it's going to go, how much trouble Jack Smith had with the documents case and the like. The Georgia case at this point has been eviscerated. I mean, it's a joke. The J6, when it comes to the obstruction issue that's before the Supreme Court, I mean, these cases are in real trouble. The New York case is one where they can totally control it. And here's the kicker. Nobody cares. And it's not just Rich Barris's polling. Ann Seltzer, the great Ann Seltzer, right?
Yeah.
Her poll found over 80%, or the Suffolk poll found over 80% of independents just said, listen, I don't give a damn. It's a political persecution. I don't care. You know, I mean, that's a huge number, Sean. That's a huge number. And the Seltzer poll did show that independents really didn't care about the verdict because they know it's politically motivated. So a lot of this is kind of baked in yet. Democrats are still hoping that there is some kind of visceral reaction to the label of felon, and that if they can get it on him, and I do believe that especially a judge like Meerschaum will lock him up if possible. Like, and people need to snap out of this. They want to kill him in prison. Like, that's what they want to do. They want him to die a natural death behind bars. But Americans see this for what it is, and Democrats are hoping, they already took the gamble, and they're hoping that kind of, like I said, that kind of visceral gut rejection of the idea of voting for a felon for president will outweigh how disgusted and scared they are at the thought of persecuting a political opponent, especially with like what this is. You brought up Michael Cohen. The entire case rides on this guy. Robert Mueller and Andrew Weissman. Weissman's one of the biggest scumbags in the federal, you know, federal lawyers. I mean, he is one of the big, he's a piece of trash. I mean, I mean, what he did to Arthur Anderson, he'll burn in hell for that. I mean, that's the kind of stuff when you die, the welcoming committee comes and asks you about, you got to atone for that stuff. You know, I mean, really. Families he ruined, Sean, think about, I mean, the level of like human devastation a man like Andrew Weissman is responsible for. And then of course he was unanimously rebuked by the Supreme Court for it, but it's already too late. The damage was done. If Andrew Weissman, a guy like him, and Robert Mueller, all right, passed on Michael Cohen because he was so so not credible. They wanted Trump. Of course they wanted Trump. But he was such a scumbag. The biggest, he was, even Andrew Weissman thought he was a scumbag. Think about that. If you're in, that's the kind, that's the level of scum. We should have like scumbag tiers. And on the scumbag tier level, Andrew Weissman's like way up there, guys. All right. Maybe only somebody like a Michael Avenatti or a Michael Cohen inch above him. So if they're kicking it to the Southern District, which is what Mueller did, and then the Southern District gets a hold of it and rejects it because everything Michael Cohen tells them turns out to be like 60% truth, 40% lie, based on what I heard. Right. And they would chase down these leads Michael Cohen would give them. And it would be so much of it was a lie and trash, Sean, that they could not use it, you know, so they get rid of it. Then it's like, you know, I'm not going to make that analogy, but the sloppy fourths, fifths, leftovers is what Alvin Bragg and Joe Biden's right-hand man, who was third up in the Justice Department, decided they were going to take up against Trump. But this is insane. I mean, there is no crime here. The witness, the supposed victim, and, you know, well, the victim, I guess you could say, is the government. But Stormy Daniels herself has refuted this. Michael Cohen has letters in his own writing refuting it. I mean, and that the only thing they can do is keep it a kangaroo court. So he can't bring an expert witness in who is an expert in election law and explain to the jury why this is nonsense. This is nuts. So it's a kangaroo court and they're going to try to get that label. Sean, let me just wrap it up by saying this. I just don't see it. I don't see people saying, I know it's a BS prosecution, all engineered by a guy who sucks as president and my life blows under him. But because they did it to him and they're calling him a felon, I'm not going to vote for the guy who I now believe was a better president and is the victim of a political persecution. That's the logic you're asking a voter to do in their mind, like a normie voter, an independent, a truly persuadable person who doesn't believe these are credible investigations, and they don't. I just don't see it. Even if they tell pollsters, some of them tell pollsters, I can't do it. I can't. They'll do it. Watch. They'll do it.
Okay, so I've got one more question for you, and it's about the apocalypse. And I hope Savage Laura Barris is in the room. And I want to get her. We're going to talk about the apocalypse. Clearly, people are worried about what's coming. People are clearly worried about the animated corpse that is Joe Biden in the White House. I've made jokes on the show that if you were in the Walking Dead universe and Joe Biden was just shuffling around amidst the horde of zombies, the zombies wouldn't know that he was still alive and probably wouldn't eat him because he's so disgusting.
Oh,
so,
my God, Sean.
People are clearly worried, but I, and along the battle crew, we're not the only ones. So I want to get Savage Laura's reaction to this. Listen.
2024, we need to start thinking long term. Can this man get you through an apocalypse? Will he be the leader of y'all survival tribe? Because if not, you need to bounce. You need to go. Is he a 2 or a 10 on the natural selection scale?
So let me ask, Laura needs Savage Rich to get her through an apocalypse?
Does Savage Laura need Savage Rich to get her through an apocalypse?
Savage Laura think that you could get her through an apocalypse?
Now
I'm really putting you on the spot.
Listen, no, you know what? I'm going to let her speak up. You can speak for yourself. Go ahead.
Oh, well, listen.
Can you hear?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, when picking a husband, right? I'll just put this out here because this is the truth, dead truth. You know.
I know what she's going to say.
I look for a certain kind of trait. Number one is, if everything goes to hell in a handbag, is this man going to be able to protect me and my family? And
yeah,
obviously he did. He has it because I married him. But, you know, these are
love, schmov.
Listen, I love him too. That was just a bonus. All right. But like, just the basic instincts of, especially a strong woman, I need a really strong man to be able to guide us through, you know, he leads, I follow. I know he'll never get us lost. He is my compass. So therefore, yeah.
You remember Tom Toms?
Yeah, yes.
She hated them. Rich. She hated them. But she used to just call me and it was a joke. She would say, you know, I don't need my TomTom. I have a Rich Rich. You know. But and then on the flip side of that though, is that like I think she would do a lot better without me than she might think she would. You know what I mean? Like seriously.
I think she's a survivor.
So next question. Savage Laura and Savage Rich. This one's for both of you. What's your weapon of choice during the apocalypse?
Ooh.
Well, it depends. Do we have the ability to get like arms or
Yes. What kind of an apocalypse?
This? The Biden apocalypse. The coming Biden apocalypse.
Well, listen, if it's the coming Biden apocalypse, then it may result in some gain of function research that went awry and led to zombies that eat human flesh. And if that's the case, I'm not going with a gun. I think I'm going to use an axe or something like maybe like the Leviathan axe, something like that. I think I really like swords. Yeah, I really like swords. Like I like the hoplite sword from an old like the old phalanx soldiers, the hoplites in like Greek formations. Yeah. I love those. Mm-hmm. And I we went to a Renaissance fair not that long ago. I was actually like Sean would love this. It was crazy because there was gear everywhere.
Does everybody walk around and say huzzah at those things?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, we watched the joust, the fight, and everything. The squire went nuts and killed the other squire. It was great. In the beginning, you'd have to use firearms for regular human beings because they're going to have firearms and they're going to want what you have. And we are preparers. We're ready, man. We are ready. And people will try to come and take what you have. They're going to know. They're going to be able to spot that you have it down, you have it locked down, and they're going to say that guy is doing well. I want what he has. Laura is excellent at foraging and knowing plants. She knows all this stuff. Like Rich, I'm like, damn, my hands feel swollen today. She goes out to the garden, plucks something, brings it back, and I swear it feels better. You know, I mean, that's how she is. What's your weapon of choice? You got to answer that question too, because you have to have a firearm for human beings, Sean. But I'm saying like, I really would like a non-firearm weapon.
Yeah, I got lots of guns. I mean, I'm not going to have that, but my weapon of choice, I think would be some sort of if we're talking zombies, some sort of a sword. I think I could see myself wielding the Braveheart sword, a two-handed bastard sword.
Oh, Claymore, bro. Yeah. Or a bastard. Yeah.
I'd be okay with that. You know,
and by the way, bastard is the name of a sword for people out there. Okay.
We need something that has length so they can't.
That's right. That's right. That's got length.
That's right. So, your answer, Laura, especially putting you on the spot like this was really great. And thank you for giving us your time, Savage Rich and Savage Laura.
Yeah, man.
Tell
somebody to save her because she looks like she'd break.
She looks fragile, don't she?
Wait, who?
The girl in the clip.
Her beautiful long nails and her.
Oh yeah,
she's adorable. She's adorbs, but she doesn't look ready for the zombie apocalypse to me, brother.
Does not look ready for the zombie apocalypse. But Savage Rich, Savage Laura, you are in Savage Winston. You could train him to be a killer puppy. tell us where we can find you and how we can support you.
Yeah, best place we're everywhere, but the best place, Sean, is on Locals, peoplespundit.locals.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Savage Rich, and thank you, Laura. Oh, hey, I'm trying to get you to come on Wendy Bell. I'm hosting Wendy Bell Friday and Monday. Are you game? Are you going to make this work for me or what?
Yeah, it's in the morning, isn't it?
Yeah, from 9
and
to 12.
And it's on the phone.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Savage Rich coming on Monday or... Coming on Friday or Monday, we'll figure it out, Rich.
Let me know when you need me, brother.
All right. See you, Rich. See you, Laura. Take care.
See you later.
All right, bye. That was Savage Rich Barris, the best pollster and I think pundit in the business. We love having him on Savage Wednesdays and tomorrow, which is Thursday. We have another amazing show for you, so make sure you are right here with us, whether you're listening wherever you listen to your podcasts or whether you're watching with us here on Rumble. Just get here with us. We love having you. Make sure you smash that little green thumb beneath this video. That helps us a lot. It's easy for you to do. It's free, and it helps propel the show to the leaderboard, which is where we're trying to get. So smash that little green thumb. Tell your family and your friends to subscribe to Battleground Live. We are taking the fight to the radical communist mouth-breathing left on the daily, and we need your help. So thank you all for watching. I'm so grateful to have you all with us. I mean, love having you all. An awesome show planned for tomorrow. Again, don't forget, I'm hosting Wendy Bell on this coming Friday and Monday, 3 hours of conservative talk radio. Don't miss that either. But anyways, thank you for joining us, folks. I will see you tomorrow night right here at 5 o'clock on Rumble and wherever you listen to your podcast. As always, God bless you all. God bless this exceptional nation that we call home. Take care. Good night. And I will see you tomorrow.